Welcome, everybody. Let me help you envision, explore, and execute your plans. This is Motivate Me, and I'm Lynette Renda. Have you thought about giving up on your dreams? Well, James Swan is going to show you exactly why you should never, never, never. Before we get started today, I just want to make sure you know you can go to motivatemepodcast.com, and there you're going to find our show notes, links to all of the resources mentioned. You'll find an application to be on the show. You'll have access to our email, and we can direct you to the Motivate Me Ultimate Support System Facebook page, because nothing matters more to me than to connect with my listeners. So I hope I can do that starting right now. Ladies and gentlemen, on today's show, we have James Swan. James is the head honcho at James Swan Enterprises. He's a designer, author, and the founder of Millionaire Dollar Decorating, where he's the podcast host. Now, James, I know you have a very important goal that you set, and I am in complete support. You set a goal for your show to deliver to iTunes at least 100 five-star reviews, and I would like to tell you that I left you one of those.
You're so kind. Thank you.
And I also know that you're from Boston, or you're living in Boston now, which I was born there, and I can prove it. Are you ready?
I can.
Go park the car and hop the yacht. Okay?
You got it.
Yep.
So see, you know, I'm from California, so it never comes out that way, no matter how hard I try.
Well, I always add what my grandmother would say too. Go park the car and have a job to make me a baked potato.
There you go.
So I will be in Boston coming up on our 50-state tour. Maybe we'll get to meet up with you there.
That would be great. That would be great.
So I want to welcome you to Motivate Me, first of all.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And I can't wait to talk about your passion, because I actually have to put my phone down and back away from your Facebook page because I'm so into it. And we're going to talk about that in a second. But before we do, you know, we kick the show off with a quote. Do you have a passage that's meaningful to you?
I do. I live by it every single day. It's a quote from Winston Churchill where he said, never, never, never give up.
And how do you connect? Tell me, it sounds like you've had some challenges along the way.
I have. There have been a few, some that might have sunk other ships, but somehow, there are days when I really do scratch my head and I'm not quite sure how I've managed to stay afloat and keep moving, but I have. And I reconnect with that idea every single day of my life, that if I can just somehow keep some forward motion happening, lean into the wind, point the tips of my skis down the hill and just go, whatever the analogy that you want to draw and apply to it. But if I can just keep forward motion happening, I will get to my goal. And so far, it seems to be happening.
I have to tell you that one of the things that I've been experiencing with my new venture here is, you know, I would get so nervous that, I have to make this happen. I have to make this happen. And I just found, and I've talked about this on the show before, that I found that when I just got to a point where I felt like I did enough and I can't do anymore. So a day or two later, it solves itself. A day or two later, I get the phone call I needed or the email that I needed, you know?
It's amazing when you can get to that point. I mean, it's not about being a slacker, because you don't get the rewards if you don't do the work. But if you have put in the work, as you just said, if you've done everything that you can do, there really is that moment of release where I envision it of just releasing the issue to the universe. And for me, I always open my hands up and face them to the sky and just say, you know what? I've done it all. I can't think of another thing that I can do to change this situation. So here you go. Do whatever you want to do with it.
Yep. And I've had a couple conversations like that myself where I'm like, I will work hard. I'm not afraid to work. Just show me what I'm supposed to be doing.
Exactly. Show me the mark you want me to hit. I'll hit it. I'll hit it 100 times if you need me to. But let's make this thing happen. And then sometimes you just hit that brick wall and you scratch your head and you go, okay, don't know what else I could have added to my to-do list. So I'm just going to release it. And then there's something about that shift in energy that the universe can then create a door, create a window, sometimes knock the wall down. Whatever happens, happens.
Well, and James, it's because I think sometimes you're not going in the right direction.
Well, there you go.
You know, we're fighting for it. And it's like, it's not going to happen. It's like somebody up there holding you by the forehead saying, aren't you cute?
Yes, swing away yeah, exactly. And try your hardest. And it's right. Just not meant to be. But yeah, sometimes we do have to be knocked on our butt before we pay attention. And I'm probably a prime example of that. It sometimes takes that thud to get our attention. And then it's like, oh, I was supposed to go that way, not that way. Duh.
Tell everybody what your passion is.
Well, my passion is beautiful living. I, since as a young of age as I can remember, have been fascinated by beautiful objects, by beautiful art, by beautiful architecture, beautiful rooms. The lives that fill them are of sort of peripheral interest to me, but just, you know, give me a beautiful room and I'm just really, really happy. So as a kid, we were fortunate to have an experience of living overseas for a period. And I remember carrying around a sketchbook while we were traveling through the Far East, which is where we lived, and just being mesmerized by buildings that I had never seen before, and sketching and doodling and just wanting to capture. I wasn't so interested in, I was interested more in the buildings and the rooms than I was many of the other things that we were seeing that captivated my sisters or my parents. And to this day, I can remember details of those rooms that fascinated me then, and they still fascinate me today. So that's the passion.
And you've made a life out of decorating and design, right?
Well, I did. Yeah, I took a detour. Funny things happen when you pay more attention to other people's dreams for you than your dreams for you.
Yeah.
And so I had a little detour. My undergraduate degree was in theology and music. And I was
theology.
I know.
That's a little different than, although I bet that you did learn a lot of great information history.
There's a surprising amount of carryover, whether it was history, whether it was a political and social point of view, mm-hmm. Whether it was just the rigors of study. And then certainly in music, I mean, the structure of music and the laws of music and the beautiful forms that can be created when those laws are, or those rules are followed. But as far as career paths go, I went down that path. I was following dreams that were not mine. And I found myself with an undergraduate degree and my first job, and I was miserable, just utterly and completely miserable.
I need to ask you to pause here because I want you to say that last line one more time, and I want my listeners to really let it soak in. Go ahead.
Chasing other people's dreams I was miserable, utterly and completely miserable.
So if this connects to you, listener, okay, you want to hear what's coming next.
Yeah, it was a series of about 6 months of me first stepping away from the position that I had and realizing that I was at a crossroads in my life. I was still young. I had lots of years ahead of me. I could do anything that I wanted to do. I needed to figure out what was important to me, not important to the people around me, not important to the people that I loved or respected or listened to. And I went back at one point, both physically and mentally, to those notebooks that I mentioned earlier, those sketchbooks that I was so passionate about filling up when I was in fifth and sixth and seventh grade. And it got me thinking, oh, wow, buildings and design. And the more I thought about it, the more funny little tingles that I got inside my body. I call them happy tingles. And I thought, okay, well, maybe that's a direction that I might want to go in. And so I began researching, and I found a master's program at a university that I was living near at the time. And my life aligned in a way that allowed me to submit my application, and I got in. And I spent the next 3 years studying architecture and design and was like a pig in mud. I was so happy.
See, that is exactly what this is all about. You know me, I say envision, explore, execute. You did that. You went back to your sketchbooks. You went back to who you were as a child and you envisioned yourself there. And you envisioned yourself, you know, with this architecture and design. And then you explored what it would take. You found a master's program in your area and then you did it. and it aligned because it was right.
Yeah.
Which truly means, it did. Which means that, you know, that's when you were supposed to go do it.
Yeah, the timing was right. Had I tried to have done it, you know, 3 years before, maybe the alignment, maybe I wasn't ready. You know, exactly. I don't know the answer to that part of the equation of why it happened at that moment in time, but it did. And it allowed me to go down a different path, a path that I had not been going down up to that point in my life.
But James, I believe that you were meant to have all of those other experiences and all of that other learning before you got to this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the maturity.
It prepares you on all sorts of different levels. Some levels are very visible when you look in the mirror or when you interact with other people. There are some layers of preparation that I think are, you know, like when you look at the stratas of the earth, there are layers that are buried so deep that we'll probably never ever physically see them. And yet they provide the foundation for the beautiful mountains that we explore and enjoy, the rivers, the oceans. The earth wouldn't be the same without those layers. So we need them.
Right. So what kind of challenges or hesitations did you have when you said, okay, when you were in that decision-making process, you know, you're doing the Envision Explore stage. What kind of hesitations or challenges came your way to say, you know, should I or shouldn't I do this?
Well, once I realized how happy the thought of this future career was making me in the moment, the decision was pretty much a done deal. I knew enough about myself to know that I needed to go in this direction. I would be foolish to go in a different direction. For me, the hesitancies and the concerns were the practical things. You know, can I get a job and go to school at the same time? And, you know, I was in a relationship at that time. And what is my partner thinking and feeling about this? And how is it going to impact their life and their work and our life together? And you talk about these things, you explore them, you act like adults, and those things got worked out. You know, they got worked out pretty well.
It's so exciting to do that. I've done this a couple times now. Like at 30, I decided to go to college. At 40, I got my MFA. You know, then I went through a coaching program. Now I'm doing this. To me, when you talk about this and that point in your life, it's just exciting. All the unknowns are exciting. What you're going to learn, how it's going to change your life. Because, you know, we all need to change our lives up sometimes. It gets so, to me, I get so bored if things are just always the same.
Amen.
You know, so I get excited when you talk about this. What do you think you've learned about yourself?
Well, through that experience and through an interesting, I'm not going to say it's a repeat because it wasn't the same scenario, but it was the same core lesson that happened a few other times or has happened a few other times in my life. Every time I've gone through that cycle of, oh, okay, I've sort of hit a dead end here, or this didn't lead me where I thought it was going to lead me, or in one situation, and I'm happy to tell the story in a little bit, what the hell just happened? I didn't see that one coming, and here I am, and what am I going to do? In those moments, that's when I learned the lesson of never, never, never give up.
You have to tell us now what happened.
Well, you know, I went down a path. I went to college. I got into that master's program. I didn't finish the program, actually. Our life took a turn, and my partner got a job transfer, and we moved out of the area. And I landed my first design job in the city that we had moved to. Serendipitously, a friend of a friend, and suddenly I had a job. So I was like, okay, well, I don't have to finish school. I was maybe half a year from finishing. Anyway, suddenly I was working in the industry that I loved, and things were going great, and the years took off, and suddenly, fast forward almost 20 years, I'm in Los Angeles with an office in Beverly Hills and a staff of 14, and we're working on projects around the country. And life is so good. And I'm doing the thing that I love, and we're getting recognized for it. And I had just been put under contract to write a book, which was kind of icing on the cake, and I was having fun with that. And then the economy did a funny thing. Mm. And in a period of about 90 days, in late 2008 and early 2009, it all went away. We had 36 projects on the books, and at the end of 90 days, we had none.
Wow.
And I had to say goodbye to staff that I had spent years gathering and nurturing and building relationships with, but there was no work for them. There was no work for us. The doors had just shut and it all literally went away. And there I sat, saying to myself, what the hell just happened? You know, nobody prepares you for that. And I made some decisions, thinking they were good decisions in that moment to sort of shore up the company. And, you know, in the moments at the time, it was just what you did. You called your banker and said, you know what, I'm just going to take out some equity out of the house and I'm going to use it to shore up my business and get through these rough couple of months. And literally once the business sort of completely folded, 30 days later, I was underwater in my home and the bank was looking at me kind of funny saying, now, why did you take all that money out? And I was scratching my head thinking, well, that was the stupidest thing I've ever done.
Right.
So lost a business, lost a home.
Oh, man.
And I was just left with nothing other than a very clear understanding that I could not give up and that I had to keep some form of forward motion happening. And so I did. I made a huge life change. I moved from Beverly Hills, California, to a little coastal village in Maine, 700 people in the village. And I wrote my book because that was the one thing that hadn't gone away. The contract to write the book was still there. And I spent about 18 months, 500 words a day, 7 days a week, and I wrote that book. And we got it published, and it won some awards, and it was a thrilling, wonderful experience. And through that, through sitting at a desk, looking out onto about 14 acres that this house sat on that I had in Maine, right there on the coast, cranking out those 500 words a day, I stumbled on this thing called Facebook. And I started talking about things that bothered me. Well, the title of the book was 101 Things I Hate About Your House. And so I started posting things on Facebook. God, don't you just hate it when? And take a look at this picture. Isn't that the most ugly living room ever? I mean, it was all very tongue-in-cheek, and I wasn't trying to be mean, and it wasn't a real snarky thing. It was just, and what happened during those 18 months that I was writing the book was that I built a Facebook following. This was back in the ancient days. I mean, when Facebook was new, I had, 13,000 people following me on Facebook just from that,
wow,
from that little adventure, just posting every single morning and letting people engage and talk. And all of a sudden I had this Facebook following, and then Twitter followed, and suddenly, I mean, I don't profess any scholarly knowledge about social media. Whatever I've learned just by stumbling through it all. But I have created this little platform for myself. And of course, my book publisher was thrilled about that because, yay, we're going to sell more books.
I want to say, James, that if it took you 18 months to write that book and you were doing it full time, imagine how long it would have taken you.
Oh.
If you were running a business at the same time, or if it even would have ended up happening with all of that going on.
It probably wouldn't have. I've sort of sat and thought about that sometimes. And
because I always look at why do things happen? And I wonder, did that happen for you? Because that's what catapulted you into actually getting this book done and building this Facebook following and changing the direction of your life.
I'm completely open to the accuracy of that statement and to that idea. Had I stayed in Los Angeles, and I say this, and this covers many facets of my life at mm-hmm. that time, had I stayed in Los Angeles, I would probably not be sitting here talking to you today.
Right. You probably wouldn't be the person you are right now.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, was it a happy time? No.
No, but that's where we learn all of our lessons, and that's where we're redirected, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I survived, you know. I survived, and I survived because I just kept moving forward, not always knowing where the path was leading, not always sure of where the door was going to take me, but I just kept moving forward.
Can you talk to us about your favorite design project?
Yeah. No, I mean, Had you asked me this while the business was up and functioning, I would have said, well, it's the project I'm working on right now. Right. Because we were really fortunate to work with some amazing people on many amazing projects. But if there was one project out of all of them, yes, there was a project down in Newport Beach, California. We actually did two homes for the client during the years that we worked together. And it was one of these relationships that right from the very first meeting, I was introduced to the couple through the architect. They had bought a house that was it was 90% completed, a spec home, when they saw it the first time. And so there was about 10% final finishes, and there wasn't a whole lot that they got to do at that point because the house was that close to being completed. And then they turned to me, and they on the basis of the recommendation from the architect, they said, okay, we're going to work with you, and we want to be in for Christmas. Now, my first meeting with them was in probably the last week of August, right before Labor Day. And they said, can we be in by Christmas? I said, well, anything's possible. I said, if you want things to move fast, you have to write bigger checks. That's the way it works. There's a three-prong approach to design: time, quality, and cost. And if you mess with one, you affect the other. Mm-hmm. So if you want things in a shorter period of time, either your quality is going to suffer, and I wasn't going to have that, not on my watch, or you're going to pay more to get first-rate quality work done in a shorter period of time.
Right.
And he looked at me and he said, how much money do you want? And I said, I've just fallen in love. You're my new favorite client. I say that very tongue-in-cheek. They were astute and very tasteful people, not necessarily as knowledgeable about fine furnishings and collecting art and objects as they wanted to be, but they were eager to learn. And so we embarked on a learning relationship.
Which I would think is fun for you.
Oh my gosh, it was incredible. It was incredible. I always brought them choices in three. So there were three different things that would fit in this space that would be beautiful. And one was sort of at a collector's level, a fine collector's level. One was a perfectly fine middle ground piece. And then there was not an economic version, but this was the more expedient version. And then we would sit and have conversations. And he wanted to know the history and where the piece came from and why is it valued as it's valued. And anyway, on and on and on. And we very quickly filled up the house, and we got them in by Christmas, and they were delighted. And then they expanded the house, and then they expanded the house again. And then there was a second house, and it just ended up being a really amazing experience that I cherish. I cherish those memories.
So for listeners who find design and decorating interesting, what kind of resources would you recommend, either book or online or anything like that?
Well, my all-time favorite design book, and it is an acknowledged classic in the industry, was actually written by the novelist Edith Wharton. She was famous not just for the books that she wrote, but for the homes that she built and or designed. And in conjunction with a decorating partner of hers, Ogden Cottam Jr., she wrote back in the early 1900s a book called The Decoration of Houses. And it's available on Amazon. You can go to Audible and pick it up as an audiobook. And it is, to my way of thinking, the quintessential basics of what a fine house is all about. So I always recommend that as a place to start. And then pick, if you have a favorite designer, more than likely they have a book or they're coming out with a book soon. There's so many amazing ones that are on the market. But that's a really great place to start if you have a passion for design. It's called The Decoration of Houses by Edith Wharton. So I would start there.
Which I find that really interesting, you know, because I'm also a writer and I love design. So I think
there you go. Yeah. They go hand in hand. In fact, there's a famous picture of her in her library at her desk, which is where she wrote all of her novels, at her home called The Mount, which is in Western Massachusetts, out near where the Boston Pops go for the summer, Tanglewood. A famous picture of her sitting there at her desk writing one of her novels. And it's in this library. You know, I don't really care that it's a picture of her. All I want to do is study the library and see how she positioned furniture and scale and lighting. And it's marvelous. So
what do you think is most important when you're decorating? You just listed something, scale, lighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so many things play into it. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. You know, if one thing is missing, there's a hole.
Right.
But foundationally, I have a belief that no room is beautiful if all the backgrounds aren't right. So if you have an empty room and you walk in and you say, oh, isn't this a beautiful room? Well, then you've got some place to start. And that means that scale and proportion are right, that the doors and the windows are placed where they want to be, given the architectural style that you're working in, that the light is right in the room, that you've chosen the right wall treatments, whether it's paneled or plaster or smooth or textured, the right colors, the lighting in the room, you know, whether you drop chandeliers, whether you have sconces on the walls. If in that moment you look at that space and you go, oh, this is beautiful. This is right. It's the way it should be. Then you can start adding furniture, and it's just like adding icing onto the cake. So that's my theory.
And the one thing is, when I was looking for a new home, probably 9 years ago now, each of the rooms were boring. They just were plain square rooms. There was nothing, not one interesting thing about it. And I have to say, in the house that I did end up choosing, I feel like in every room, there's at least something slightly interesting. Even in the guest rooms that are just squares, the mm-hmm. windows are different.
Yeah.
So at least that's interesting.
Well, and that is the job of the architect. And if an architect has done his job well, he will, in every space in a home, provide, I don't care how tiny a change it is. It may be just a slightly different shape or sized window. It might be doing something interesting with the trim or the baseboards or the trim around the ceiling. Deliver something that provides some personality and distinction to the architecture of that room so that you have that moment, so that when you walk in, you go, oh, isn't that nice?
Right.
Isn't that just so? And then when you string a whole group of rooms like that together, then you've got a house that you're kind of interested in living in.
Okay, so this part of the show is Motivate Me Express to Success, because I believe to get people to act, they need to first envision it, then explore what it would take, and then execute a plan. So if we're talking about somebody bringing decorating and design into their lives, what should they envision for themselves or see for themselves if they want to become a decorator?
If they want to go into it professionally, they should call me and we'll have a real serious conversation. it's a wonderful profession and I highly recommend it. It's not an easy profession. I mean, people, you know, always would pull me aside. Oh my God, you have the most glamorous job in the world. How much fun you must have. And yes, I did. I had wonderful times and experiences and adventures. But at the end of the day, the profession of design and decoration is probably one of the most challenging professions in the world. Because unlike a lawyer who may have an assistant or a secretary who he has to control the quality of their work, and they're working on documents and maybe contracts or whatever, and then it's the client, and then maybe it's the opposing lawyer, and that's about it. Those are the things that he has to control to make his business run successfully, to please his clients. With the design and the decorating profession, it's times a thousand. Because I'm not the one building the house, plastering the walls, painting, installing the plumbing, doing the electrical. I'm responsible for all of that being done in a timely and orderly fashion. I'm not the one building and upholstering the sofas and the chairs. I'm not the one carving the wood that goes into the tables. I'm not the one that's creating the light fixtures. But I am responsible for all of those things and making sure that they arrive at one location in a reasonable amount of time, at a reasonable cost, with no mistakes, no problems with shipping, no problems with damage or delivery issues. And then at some point when the house is ready, I've got to move it all in without a scratch or a ding. And I've got to put it in its perfect place, and I've got to light it beautifully, and I've got to finish it off with flowers and with beautiful linens on the bed and beautiful china on the table. And have the music going and the candles lit when the client walks in the door, and have all of that done with a smile on my face, constantly making sure the client is happy. It's a lot of fun. It's like it's a huge rush, but it's not as glamorous as some people think.
That sounded so exciting to me, though.
Well, maybe you've got a new career on the horizon.
I know how tormenting it can be to build a house and organize, you know, the tradesmen are the hardest part.
Oh, yeah.
As far as, you know, going and picking out the different things and seeing it all to come together, that must be extremely rewarding, especially for people who don't have time or the know how to do it. And you're bringing what's going to be their home to life for them.
Yeah, absolutely. That we used to call it opening night. It is in the design industry what in the theater opening night is all about, because when that curtain goes up in the theater on opening night, all of those months, sometimes all of those years of writing and rewriting and staging and blocking and set construction and music and lighting and all of that, when that curtain goes up, it all has to come together and it all has to be perfect. And that's when the audience gasps and that's when the standing ovation happens. And with design, for us, it was the first walkthrough. And we would have everything perfect. You know, everything would be in place. The candles would be lit, flowers on all the tables. Music would be playing softly. Sometimes we would have a bartender and champagne would be poured. And I can remember one instance, a client was flying in from New York. We sent a car to the airport to pick her up. She had invited seven of her closest friends to have dinner in her new home. Having never seen her home, she asked us to have a chef in the kitchen, meal underway, so that she could come in, we would have 30 minutes to walk the house with her, her guests would then arrive, and then she would go into her first dinner party in her new home.
I love that.
Well, yeah, and we had done projects with her before. We knew her taste, we knew the things that she would love, and we were very, very confident, but trust me, there's a moment of clear panic because she had been living in New York the entire time.
Right, right.
And had not seen any of the progress, so this was all brand new to her.
And how did she like it?
Oh, she was in tears. She was so delighted.
And what was the color scheme? I'm trying to see it.
Well, it was a Nob Hill apartment in San Francisco, and it overlooked the bay. And we had chosen from some of the antique oriental rugs that we had put on the floor in the living room and the dining room a very, very, very soft honey color for all of the walls, which we had glazed. Mm-hmm. So the walls were, I would think of a very pale, light honey. And it was lacquered, so it was highly reflective. And so there was candles everywhere. And she was a great collector of Middle Eastern art and artifacts. So there were exotic pieces of furniture and wall hangings hanging around. And yeah, it was magical. It really was magical. But there was that moment, just as she was getting ready to walk in the door, where my heart stopped. I was like, oh, God, please let her love it all. Or at least love enough to get through this first evening. And then we'll come back in and we can fix anything.
Right.
But and she did. And it was delightful.
So to explore then, if somebody wants to move into this, and like you're saying, if you want it to be a profession, explore reaching out to James.
Yeah, definitely do that. And talk to other designers. I mean, you'll find, the design profession, I have said this from my first experiences with it, are some of the warmest and non-egotistical, non-judgmental, but also there's a lack of ego about the design profession in general. And so to call a local designer or to meet them at a chamber event, or if the design community is hosting something in the area, maybe a designer show house, to go up and just to begin to chat with them and say, I'm fascinated by the work that you do, and can you tell me about what it's like? And you'll be amazed where conversations like that can take you.
Okay, so to execute a plan then.
Then decide what you're willing to do to get to your goal. If your goal is to become a design professional, then it's probably going to mean 4 years of school. And it's probably going to mean a couple of years of, entry-level work before you move up to junior, and then before you eventually move up into a senior position. And then if you want to eventually have your own firm, there's a lot of knowledge that you should be gathering along the way. Have a clear understanding of where you want to take this. You know, if it's just to have, a hobby and to do it for fun because you love it, then pursue it like that. Pursue it like a hobby that you're passionate about. But if you really do decide to make it a profession, I say go for it. There's no reason why you can't. Just be prepared to do the work that's needed.
And I think what's great about it is you can do it as just a hobby. And it can be fun. And when you look at your own home, you can constantly redo things.
Oh, endlessly.
Endlessly.
Much to the chagrin of your partner,
exactly.
Believe me.
Yes, yes.
But yes, it can be an endless laboratory for you to play and experiment. And if you do fill up one home, well, who's to say you can't have a second one, right?
Yeah, I've done that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so closing advice.
I would like to leave all of your listeners with the thought that we started with. Whatever your goal, whatever the direction that your life is taking you, whatever that path looks like today, never, never, never give up.
And you are living proof of that.
I am. Absolutely.
I want to thank you so much, James, for coming on the show. I was so excited to talk to you.
A delight. Thank you for the invitation. I've enjoyed being here with you, Lynette.
So everybody, this is your go-do. James, what should they go do right now today to get started?
They should go to their local bookstore or magazine rack or newsstand, and they should pick out three magazine publications, Architectural Digest, World of Interiors, Elle Decor, you name it, whatever your favorites are, and go home and light a candle, put some music on, have some quiet time for you, and just begin to feed yourself on the beautiful work of designers represented in those magazines from all over the world.
I also recommend going to James's Facebook page too. You can see a lot of that there.
Well, there's that too. Absolutely. You can, and the easiest way to do that is to go to our new website for the podcast, which is milliondollardecorating.com. And there's three little links in the upper right-hand corner that will connect you with either our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, or our Instagram account. And we would love to have you take a look at our work and become part of the Million Dollar Decorating family.
And they can reach out to you there. Right.
Yeah, that's the best one, milliondollardecorating.com.
Okay, and I will also include you in our private Facebook group, if that's okay with you, so they could reach out to you there. I would love it if you posted some of your pictures in there and asked those questions that we could all answer.
Oh, I'd be delighted to.
Okay, that's great. That's the end of the show, everybody. Please remember, you motivate me. I'm Lynette Renda.